could understand her. Still, it was polite to let her know. She walked into the drugstore and went to the back, where several dozen lockers of various sizes stood along one wall. After scanning the barcode on the email she'd received, she punched in the code and a locker opened. She retrieved the box. It was the last of the items she'd ordered for Ashton's visit. His room was ready with a new bed, linens, and a desk. Kit had moved in a TV they rarely used. Stacy had added a few framed prints for color, then had gone online for a back-to-school bundle box. Ashton only had a couple of classes to finish, but she didn't know if he would think to bring things like pens, paper, and post-it notes. Besides, who didn't love school supplies? She carefully tucked the box into her backpack so as not to strain her body. Carrying the baby had thrown her body out of alignment. Her prenatal yoga helped her strength and balance, but she wanted to make sure she didn't pull a muscle. Once the backpack was in place, she walked out and untied Bay. "Good girl," she told the dog as she crouched down and hugged her. Bay licked her cheek. Stacy rose and started back to the house. She liked having Bay around. The dog was easy to take care of and good company. What she didn't want to admit but couldn't avoid was the fact that the dog was also a distraction from her own pregnancy. The same with Ashton. Kit was a perfect husband and had never once mentioned the irony of her interest in getting Ashton's room ready while refusing to do anything about their baby's space. Every morning he tore another sheet off the calendar, gently reminding her that there was an inevitable end to what she was going through. Sometimes Stacy wished the baby was already here, so she wouldn't be worrying about what was going to happen. She would already know if she could fake being a decent mother or not. If only she was more like Harper, she thought, talented and loving, with great mothering skills. But Stacy wasn't. She and her sister had always been close, but oh so different. One of her earliest Christmas memories was of opening an easy-bake oven from Santa. She'd immediately started mixing together ingredients, not to bake a cake, but to get a chemical reaction. Bunny had never understood, and Stacy's dad hadn't much cared. He'd regretted not having sons instead of daughters. But Grandpa Ray had been there for her. He'd wanted to talk about things like jet propulsion and living on Mars, and she'd wanted to listen. He'd been the one to show her how to use a telescope and a microscope. When girls her age had been playing with dolls, she'd been trying to find a science club and building computers. With Grandpa Ray's help, she'd gotten to go to space camp when she was 9. The following summer, while the rest of the family had been at Disney World, she and Grandpa Ray had visited Cape Canaveral and been taken on a private tour. "Grandpa Ray wanted me to be an astronaut," she told Bay as they turned onto their street. "I would have been interested if there had been a Mars mission on the horizon, but that's still so many years away. I went into medical research instead." She smiled at the dog. "He was a great man. You would have liked him." Bay's stubby tail wagged as she listened attentively. "I always fit with Grandpa Ray," she continued. "He didn't care that I was smart or awkward, or that I couldn't make pie crust by the time I was 8, unlike her mother, who had cared about all those things. Bunny had always resented her youngest being more interested in how the world worked than how to knit, sew, or decoupage. How many times had Harper stood up for her, defending her when Bunny went on the attack? Stacy undid Bay's leash as they entered the house, then lowered her backpack onto a chair. She checked on the crockpot chili Kit had started that morning before walking into the bedroom to change out of her work clothes. French doors led to their fenced backyard. Although they were only a mile or two from the ocean, they didn't have a view. Stacy had never understood paying for something as silly as the ability to see something in nature. The brain responded to inputs that were essential for survival. Everything else faded into the background. She knew that she would cease to see a view within a matter of weeks, so why pay for it? She'd already bought the house when she met Kit. The first time he'd come over, she'd told him her theory about views. He'd responded by telling her she was about the sexiest woman he'd ever met. The news had surprised her. Stacy knew she was relatively attractive, and she kept herself fit. There had always been men in her life. No one all that special, but she'd had boyfriends. Still, she'd frequently had the sense that they were more interested in her body than in her brain. Kit was the first romantic partner who made her feel safe and loved for who she was. She changed into yoga pants and a t-shirt, then walked barefoot to the living room. Bay trailed along with her. Once the DVD was in the machine, Bay curled up in her bed by the sofa. She glanced at the door before putting her head down. "Kit will be back in an hour," Stacy told her. "He goes to a support group for stay-at-home dads," something he'd started when they'd learned she was pregnant. "Kit's like that. He asks for help. He solicits advice. He's extremely well-adjusted." All things she admired about him, probably because none of those characteristics described her. He'd suggested she look for a support group for working moms, but so far she hadn't been interested. "There's something wrong with you. You're not a normal girl." The memory echoed unexpectedly in her mind, as vivid and uncomfortable as it had been when the words had first been screamed at her. She'd been 13 and eager to talk to her mother. Stacy had secretly scheduled a meeting with one of the high school counselors to talk about an accelerated program so she could go to college early. She'd already decided to focus on medical research, especially diseases of the central nervous system, so why wait to get started? With the information in hand, Stacy was determined to convince her mother to let her start the process in the fall. Bunny had wanted to talk about the fact that a boy had called for Stacy. Looking back, Stacy realized they'd talked at cross purposes for nearly 10 minutes before figuring out what the other was saying. Stacy had dismissed the call while Bunny had refused to discuss Stacy starting high school in the fall and finishing in 2 years. "No man wants a woman who's that smart," her mother had told her, "except who you are." "This is who I am," she'd yelled back. "I want to go to college. I don't want to talk to some stupid boy on the phone, okay?" "There's something wrong with you. You're not a normal girl." She'd brushed off the assessment, raced to her room, and had immediately called her Grandpa Ray. He and Bunny had fought for days, while Stacy's father had ignored whatever was going on at home, and Harper had offered Stacy sisterly support. In the end, the outcome was inevitable. Bunny might not like it, but she could never say no to her father. He was, after all, a man. As Stacy stood with her feet shoulder-width apart and began to concentrate on her breathing, she acknowledged yet more irony in her life. Bunny wanted her daughters to be exactly like her, and she resented that Stacy refused to cooperate. That Stacy had been able to go to college when she was barely 16 had happened because a man had intervened. She'd achieved her escape and her success in part because of her mother's anachronistic worldview. She should find humor in that, only she couldn't. Instead, she pressed her right hand against her growing belly and wondered if it was possible her mother was right. And if there was something wrong with her, how would that play out for baby Jewel? Chapter 7 Harper had all the gift bags stacked together in boxes. Kathy had texted to say she wouldn't be picking them up until tomorrow, after all, which left Harper nearly frothing. She could have had an extra 2 days to maybe get some sleep instead of staying up for 2 nights to get them done. She didn't know if she was angrier at Kathy for playing her or herself for being played. She heard a knock at the front door. Then Lucas walked in. Thor immediately raced toward him. Lucas bent over and greeted the dog before calling out, "It's me." Harper set the last box in place by the sofa and looked at her client/friend. Despite having worked all day, Lucas looked as fresh and handsome as he had that morning. His shirt was barely wrinkled. He was rested and tanned, while she was a hot mess. No, she thought, thinking of her mom jeans and stained t-shirt. Even her messiness wasn't the least bit hot. She was a cold mess. "Hi. Catch any bad guys?" "A couple." "Wanna stay to dinner?" The invitation was automatic. She wasn't sure when or how it had started, but Lucas ate dinner with them at least 3 nights a week. Thanks to Bunny's skillful tutelage and years of training, Harper chronically overbought and overcooked, so there was always plenty for unexpected company. Lucas was funny, charming, and a lovely distraction when things with her mother got too intense or moments with her daughter got too quiet. Harper already had a salad made. She'd prepared vegetables for steaming and had chicken piccata ready to brown and simmer. The drama of this evening's meal would be the, wait for it, store-bought pasta.
"I'd love to," he said, Thank you.
I bought the noodles. Bunny's going to have a fit. Just so you're warned.
Unarmed drama doesn't faze me.
They walked into the study together. Lucas crossed to the wall safe that had come with the house. It was a silly thing, really, but kind of sweet. Whenever he came to dinner from work, he locked up his gun. She'd tried to explain it was unlikely that either Becca or her mother were going to lunge for it, and if they did, she was sure he could take them. But he insisted.
"What if I had a breakdown during the meal?" she asked. "I know the combination. I could take out everyone."
He put the gun in the otherwise empty safe and turned the lock to secure it.
"It's a plain black gun, Harper. You couldn't possibly use it without gussing it up in some way first. I'd have time to subdue you while the glue set."
Even as she chuckled, she wondered if there was an uncomfortable truth in his words. They returned to the living room to find Jazz waiting for them. She ran over to get her greeting from Lucas. When he'd finished rubbing her face, he grabbed one of the rope toys the dogs loved and got on the floor with the two of them. There was much growling, yipping, and wrestling as man and dogs vied for the precious toy. Harper retreated to the kitchen to continue prepping the meal. Per the rules of the universe, or maybe just per her mother, the salad plates should be set on the table at precisely 6:30. To that end, she got out a small mixing bowl, along with the ingredients for her smoky paprika dressing. She poured it into a dressing-sized crystal pitcher, then whipped up the sauce for the chicken. Lucas wandered into the kitchen and went to the sink to wash his hands.
"Those dogs are smart. I have to up my game."
Harper nodded at them, feverishly drinking from their bowls. "If it makes you feel any better, they are saying the same thing about you." He dried his hands, then leaned against the counter.
"I saw the gift bags. They're impressive."
"Thanks. It's a 50th wedding anniversary party. I'm sure it's going to be lovely." Lucas's gaze settled on her face. For a second, she was terrified that he was going to ask her how long they'd taken, or had she been paid enough. He was always ready with the unexpected question. Thankfully, he only said,
"You're busy these days."
"I am." She walked into the dining room and studied the table. They were still celebrating spring, so the tablecloth was a pale mint color. She'd already stacked plates, patterned napkins and placemats on one end of the table. Now she just had to deal with the rest of it.
"Misty is going to be on an HBO special," she said, as she headed for the craft room.
Lucas followed her.
"That's great."
"I know. She's so sweet. I love working with her."
"If you say she's your favorite, I'll be crushed."
Harper grinned. "She is, but I won't say it."
"Thank you. Let me know when the special's on. I'll want to watch."
"Some of the humor is fairly subtle. I'm not sure Persimmon will get it."
"Persimmon and I are reaching the end of our time together."
"Because she's turning 23?
"Something like that."
Harper flipped on the lights to her craft room. She kept her dining room supplies at one end. She pointed to several clear plastic drawers. "Napkin rings, pink, rose, or silver. You pick," she said, as she studied her collection of vases and bowls, wondering what would be the easiest to put on the table. Lucas held up four ribbed silver napkin rings.
"These okay?"
"They're great." She grabbed small silver-toned boxes in various heights and thrust them at Lucas, then chose flameless candles that would fit inside. Before turning away from the wall of crap she kept just because she was expected to decorate her table every single night for dinner, she flashed on her small, cramped office space and realized that, as always, Lucas was right.
"Oh, no," she said. "I've been doing this all wrong."
"Your table?" her mother asked, appearing at the craft room door.
"I've been telling you that for years. You need to layer your linens. Really, Harper, a tablecloth, placemats, and napkins? A monkey could be more creative. At least make shorter contrasting runners to drape width-wise. It will add visual interest."
Harper found herself automatically considering her mother's idea. In that nanosecond, she thought about the fabric she kept on hand and how easy it would be to pull out her sewing machine and...
"No!"
She literally took a step back and shook her head. "No, Mom. Stop, please. I'm not looking for more ways to waste time decorating the table for dinner."
"Waste time?
It's dinner with your family. What could be more important?"
Lucas took the supplies she'd given him and left. Harper put the flameless candles down and put her hands on her hips. "Mom, I'm serious. I can't keep doing this. I have work I need to be doing. I have another order for gift bags. Misty needs new T-shirt designs. I heard back from the city and they want me to get going on the summer mailer. Once I design it and get it printed, I have to put on all the labels myself." Lucas returned and collected the candles.
"Hire someone to do the grunt work."
"What?" Harper and Bunny said together. Bunny glared at him. "Lucas, I know you're trying to help, but be serious. It's bad enough Harper is taking time from raising Becca to do this, but to hire an assistant? If she's going to work, she should be doing it all herself." Which was exactly what Harper had been thinking. Only hearing her mother say it put the sentiment in a totally different light. "Why?" she asked. Bunny stared at her. "Why what?" "Why can't I hire someone? Why is that so awful? Mom, I'm drowning here. My job is how I feed my family. I'm struggling every single month. Your rent money helps, and I appreciate it, but it doesn't come close to covering the mortgage, let alone the expenses. I have no idea if Terrence is going to keep his promise about paying for half Becca's college, so I have to deal with that as well." Bunny sniffed. "Becca's a beautiful young woman. Why does she need to go to college? She'll marry a nice boy who will take care of her." Harper did her best not to shriek. "Mom, no. Just no. Becca is going to get an education so she has choices and can take care of herself. I thought I'd have a man to take care of me, and look where that got me. I will not put my daughter in this position. It worked out for you, but it doesn't work out that way for everyone. I want Becca to be strong and independent, like Stacy. She's smart and capable. We need to encourage her to be her best self."
"You're being ridiculous."
"I'm being honest. I'm nearly 42, Mom, and I'm struggling. It's my fault. I get that. I should have finished college. I should have gone to work when Becca started school, but I didn't. I'm doing the best I can with the choices I made." She squared her shoulders. "I didn't have time to make pasta. I bought some from the store. You're going to have to deal with that." Bunny glared at her, then turned on her heel and marched out of the room. It was only then Harper saw her daughter and Jazz standing in the doorway. "Your grandmother thinks I should layer more linens when I set the table." Becca rubbed Jazz's head. "Going crossways? I can see how that would be pretty. You're not going to do it, are you?"
"No."
Becca smiled. "Mom, store-bought pasta is okay with me. The same with bread and cookies and anything else you don't want to make. I've had it all before at my friends' houses, and it's not horrible."
"Thank you. I knew I couldn't trust those other mothers. They always said they were feeding you homemade, but they were lying."
Becca giggled. Harper allowed herself to smile. "Grandma loves the drama," Becca told her. "It makes her feel special." "An unexpected insight. Thank you for that."
"You're welcome."
Her daughter sighed.
"Thor ate the raw chicken."
"What?" Becca grinned.
"I'm kidding, Mom."
Harper pressed her hand to her chest.
"Don't do that. I'm getting old, and I could very possibly have a heart condition."
Becca tried to summon some enthusiasm as she lay sprawled on the comfortable sofa. She had a feeling that Lucas hadn't been kidding about her keeping up her grades in exchange for him helping her get in her driving hours. She was doing okay in English, Spanish, and geometry. It was European history where she was getting C's. History was so boring. The whole second half of the class focused on World War II, which was like a million years ago. Why did anyone care about that kind of stuff?
"You're not listening," Jordan complained.
"I was thinking about the homework I have to do. I need to write a paper for European history, and we have that chem test next week. I can't believe how much math there is in that class."
"I know. I thought we'd be doing more fun stuff in the lab, but no. There's equations."
Jordan flipped her long hair over her shoulder.
"I wonder when Nathan will get here. He had a meeting after swim practice. You know he got a scholarship to UCLA to play water polo, right?"
"Uh-huh." No point in mentioning that Jordan had already told her 8 times. Yes, Nathan was a water polo god, and the world stood in awe of his talent. which was something she could have joked about, but not anymore. Jordan was convinced that Becca couldn't get past her jealousy when it came to her friend's new sex life, and Becca couldn't figure out how to convince her otherwise. Possibly, because she really didn't know how she felt. Yes, she would like a boyfriend, someone who thought she was special, but sex? There was so much going on already, and to be honest, the thought of it was both exciting and scary. Most of the time, though, scary won. There was a knock at the front door. Jordan flew across the family room to the foyer and disappeared from view. Becca sat up, uneasy at the thought of reclining with Nathan around. Not that she could say why, but sometimes he made her uncomfortable. She told herself he wasn't the problem. She was. Maybe Jordan was right, and she was jealous of the whole sex thing, although she really didn't think it was that. She heard the happy couple murmur something. They stepped into view as Nathan pulled Jordan close and kissed her like they were halfway to doing it right there. Becca looked away, but not before she saw Nathan's hand settle on her friend's ass. He squeezed really hard. Becca tried not to shudder. Whatever they were doing, it should be, you know, special, or at least in private. She unzipped her backpack and pretended to be looking for something as the kiss went on and on. When they finally drew apart, she looked up. Nathan, 6'2" of blonde, blue-eyed handsomeness, winked at her.
"Hey, Becca."
"Hey." Jordan wrapped her arms around Nathan's narrow waist for a second, then jumped back. "Okay, I'm going to go upstairs and put on more lip gloss. Becca, get out some snacks from the freezer and put them in the oven. I'll be right back." Becca got up and walked into the kitchen. The giant Sub-Zero refrigerator nearly filled one wall. The freezer was filled with all kinds of prepared foods, mostly from Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, but still, Becca's grandmother would have a fit if she ever saw them. She reviewed the selection, picking mini quiches that were always good. She set the temperature on the oven, then put the quiches on a cookie sheet. In the refrigerator, she found prepared ranch dip and a plate of cut-up vegetables. There were chips in the pantry. Nathan leaned against the bar high counter and watched her work.
"You know your way around Jordan's kitchen," he said.
"We've been friends a long time, and I'm here a lot. Her mom always makes sure there's plenty of food for us." She had the need to keep moving, although she couldn't say why. She'd been in the same room with Nathan dozens of times. He was perfectly fine. In fact, he mostly ignored her, which sometimes she preferred. But today he seemed to be watching her.
"Jordan tell you about Mexico?" he asked.
"That you went with her family?"
He moved toward her. "No, Becca. The other part."
Somehow she found herself backed against a corner of the counter. Nathan stood in front of her, and there was nowhere to move. He put his hands on her waist and leaned close. For one horrifying second, she thought he was going to kiss her. But instead he whispered,
"I can do that for you, too, if you want."
He smelled faintly of chlorine and too much cologne, and she didn't like the way his fingers squeezed ever so slightly.
I don't know what that means," she whispered, wishing he would move back and give her more room.
He kissed the side of her neck.
"A virgin thing. I'm good with virgins. I take things slow and easy.
You'll like it."
She shoved him hard and glared at him. "What are you talking about? You didn't just say that. Jordan's your girlfriend. You're supposed to be in love with her."
"I told her I loved her," he said with a shrug. "There's a difference."
"What? That didn't make any..." She felt her eyes widen. "You lied? You lied to get her to sleep with you? That's disgusting."
"Whatever gets the job done. So, what about you?"
He started toward her again. She had no idea what he was going to do, but she was sure she didn't want any part of it. She shoved him again, as hard as she could, then pushed past him. She grabbed her backpack, then raced out the front door. She was still running when she reached the end of the block. Halfway home, she slowed enough to catch her breath. Her whole body hurt. Her head felt funny, and her stomach was a mess. She tried to slow her breathing, only to have to turn toward some bushes and throw up. She vomited until there was nothing left, then started to cry. What had just happened? Why had Nathan acted like that? Becca couldn't think, couldn't breathe. She started running again, not stopping until she made it to her house. Her mom was on the phone with a client. Becca hurried past her mom's office toward her own room. When she got there, she collapsed on the bed and gave in to more tears. She was scared and confused and sick. A few minutes later, she felt a weight on the bed. She raised her head. "Oh, Mom." But it wasn't her mother. Jazz had come into the room and jumped up on her bed. Thor stood close by as if standing guard. Becca threw her arms around her dog and hung on. Jazz snuggled close.
"It was so horrible," Becca whispered. "He scared me. I didn't think he was going to do anything bad. But what he said? I thought he and Jordan were in love."
Jazz watched her attentively. Thor lay down on the floor, but kept his attention on her. Becca swallowed.
"He's her boyfriend. What is he thinking?"
She had a bad feeling he was thinking that he could use Jordan's friends the way he used Jordan. Her phone chirped. She reached for it and saw a text from Jordan.
"Nathan says your mom told you to get home, but I know the truth. You have to get over it, B. Don't be jealous of me. You're my friend."
Becca stared at her phone, then tossed it on the floor and rolled onto her back. She had no idea what to do or think or say. All she knew for sure was that Nathan was a jerk, Jordan was blind, and none of this was going to end well. Chapter 8 The landscaping company pushed Harper over the edge. She'd been prepared to do all the work herself, to stay up nights and give up sleep, but an unexpected call from a landscaper who needed her to do the billing for him was one job too far. The money was good and the work relatively easy. There was an existing database. All Harper had to do was enter the amount for the month, print out the invoices, stuff them in envelopes, and pop them in the mail. Easy peasy, except for the fact that there were nearly 500 clients, and the invoicing had to be done in less than 2 days. Between that new job, her regular clients, the additional brochure work she had for the city, and a flower shop client who wanted a spruce on content for her website, Harper was slammed. She'd been forced to hire help. Rather than go through the trouble of placing an ad online and interviewing people, she heard about Morgan Wolfenbarger, a friend of a friend who was looking for part-time work. In the Oh Goody column, Morgan showed up right on time. She was tall and curvy, with long, curly, dark hair. Under items that would be considered less fortunate, Morgan was a talker. "Your house is really nice," she said as Harper showed her to the small office where she would input the information on Harper's only computer. Note to self, if she was going to continue to use extra help, she would need a second computer. "We need to remodel our kitchen," Morgan continued as she settled in the chair. "It's a disaster, but with the kids and everything, when would we find the time? And what would we do while it was torn up? I guess I could freeze a bunch of meals, but who wants to do that? Trust me, after running suppers in the bag all these years, the last thing I want to do is prep meals." Harper remembered the cute storefront in town. "Was that your company? I heard good things about it." Not that she would ever have used the service. Suppers in the bag provided ingredients and recipes for easy meals. You went in and prepped a handful of meals, then took them home and cooked them when you needed them. A time saver for the busy mom, or at least one who wasn't expected to make every single thing from scratch. "My husband bought the franchise for me. We both thought it was a great idea, but then it turned out to be way more work than I expected. I lost my best employee." Morgan rolled her eyes. "Don't ever hire family. It's a disaster. Anyway, after that I had to put in more hours, which was a mess, and in the end we sold the franchise." She sighed. "I'd really rather stay home, but Brent says I need to bring in some money for the kids' college funds. Oh, speaking of money, you're going to pay me under the table, right?" "What?" "No, I'll be reporting your income." If she didn't, Harper wouldn't be able to claim the deduction, which she needed to reduce her own taxes. "Oh, yeah, and it was illegal." "I thought you said you would." Morgan's mouth formed a pout. "You said I would have to be contract labor. So what does that mean? I have to keep track of my own income and report it and stuff?" "Yes, that's what it means. I don't want to hire you as an employee until we both know this is going to work out." "That sucks." Morgan turned back to the computer and sighed. "Fine. What do you want me to do?" Harper showed her how to pull up the individual landscaping invoices and enter the amount to be billed.
"I get it, I get it," she grumbled halfway through the explanation. "I was hoping the work would be more interesting. I told Brent getting a job like this was going to be a drag. Maybe I should try something in sales."
"Until then," Harper murmured, trying not to snap at the other woman. "If Morgan worked as hard as she complained, everything would be fine."
She left her to do the billing and went into her craft room to start on the next set of bags she had to make for Kathy. 4 hours later, Harper thought longingly of the book of instructions Great Aunt Cheryl had left. Maybe there was a command that would have the dog stalking Morgan without actually hurting her. Her so-called helper had been anything but helpful. Morgan had found 20 excuses to stop billing and start talking. She'd taken 3 breaks, had spent time on her cell phone both talking and texting. At the end of her scheduled time, she hadn't entered even a quarter of the invoices.
"I know I said I could come tomorrow," Morgan said as she walked to the front door.
"But I just don't know. Can I text you later?"
Harper gritted her teeth.
"Sure, let me know."
Because as annoying and inefficient as Morgan had been, Harper needed help.
"Okay, and you'll pay me on Friday?"
Harper wanted to ask, "Pay you for what?" but instead forced herself to smile and said,
"Of course."
"Great.
It was fun today. Bye."
Morgan drove away. Harper went into the living room and screamed out loud. Both dogs stared at her as if concerned about the state of her being.
"I'm fine," she told them before sinking onto the sofa and covering her face with her hands.
"That doesn't bode well,"
Lucas said as he let himself into the house and bent down to pet an enthused Thor.
"What happened?"
She raised her head. "I hired someone."
"Good for you."
"She was a disaster."
"Did you check her references?"
Lucas looked good, as he always did. Jeans, boots, long-sleeved shirt, and blazer. There was an air of competence about him. He was a gentleman who knew how to handle himself. He turned to Jazz and greeted her before sitting across from the sofa. Harper groaned. "I didn't ask for references. She's a friend of a friend, and I was desperate. I thought it would be fine, but it wasn't. She never shut up. When she wasn't talking to me, she was on the phone. She took 3 breaks in 4 hours, and she wanted to be paid under the table. She barely did any work. So I'll be up late tonight finishing the invoices." She held up her hand. "Don't say it. I know. I'm the boss. I should have told her to shut up and do the work." Only that wasn't her style. She didn't want to have to manage her help. She wanted them to show up and do their job for the time paid. She waited, but Lucas didn't speak. Finally, she groaned.
"What? Just say it."
"You told me not to say it."
"I take it back."
"Your business isn't going to be what you want it to be until you take it seriously and treat it with respect. You're only playing at being a business owner, Harper. And it shows."
She winced. "That's harsh."
"What do you want from all this? You're more than capable. Set some goals, then follow through. Until then, you're only 5 minutes away from everything crashing down on you."
She'd thought she was closer to 10 minutes from disaster, but his point was a good one.
Brutal, but honest.
Maybe it was time to listen to what she already knew was true. Stacy found herself wanting to bounce in her seat as they drove to the airport. She didn't know why she was so excited to see Ashton again, but she was. A voice in her head whispered it might be because he would be a distraction from worrying about the impending baby, but she ignored that. She enjoyed spending time with Kit's nephew.
"What are you thinking?"
her husband asked as they headed north on Pacific Coast Highway. "Then I hope Ashton enjoys his time with us."
"I do, too. He's been through a lot."
He had, dealing with his mother and getting moved around so much.
"I'm glad he's going to be with us until he heads to college."
She looked at Kit. "He's going to need a car to drive. Instead of trading in yours for the SUV you want, let's keep it and he can use it. Do you think he'll need a car when he goes to MIT? Maybe we could keep it here for him to use on break." Kit had been researching the safest SUVs so they could have it before the baby was born. Yet one more area where she was woefully unprepared to be a parent. She hadn't even thought about things like safe cars or baby-proofing the house. Ashton would be easier. He could mostly take care of himself. Kit glanced at her again and shook his head.
"You won't mind?"
She struggled to figure out what he was talking about. Her being a bad mother was unlikely to be the topic at hand.
Mind what?
Not trading in my car? It's worth about 6 or 7 grand.
We can afford a new car without it. Don't you want Ashton to have a car?
Yes, I want him to have a car. I just don't want you to think I'm spoiling him, or...
He drew in a breath.
He's my problem, Stacy, not yours.
I thought he was our family. Was I wrong?
Kit grabbed her hand and kissed her knuckles.
You're not wrong, and I'm one lucky guy.
She was grateful he thought that. From her perspective, she was riddled with flaws, and the good fortune was all hers.
Then it's settled, she told him. You'll go get the SUV in the next week or so, and Ashton will drive your escort. I'll keep the Accord. Everyone is happy.
Everyone is.
Before they could pull into the cell phone lot, Ashton texted that he had his bag and would be waiting for them on the lower level.
Stacy watched for him, then waved when she spotted him.
Over there! Kit maneuvered through the crush of cars. Stacy jumped out when he came to a stop.
You're here, she said, hugging him. How was your trip?
Good. Both flights were on time. I had an aisle seat and the flight attendant gave me extra peanuts.
He grinned as he spoke, which made her chest tighten just a little. Ashton had Kit's smile. The continuity between the generations gave her an odd sense of comfort. Unlike his uncle, Ashton had hazel eyes that were almost gray. Ashton's hair was a little darker and as much in need of a cut as Kit's. He was about 6 feet tall and still had the lanky build of a growing teen. Kit got out of the car and approached.
Good to see you. Hey, Kit.
They grasped hands, then did that kind of semi-hug backslap that men seem to favor these days. Ashton tossed his battered suitcase in the trunk and grabbed his backpack before sliding into the back seat.
The baby's still a secret? Ashton asked as they drove toward the exit. In case I see Bunny. Oh, you'll see her, Kit said cheerfully. Stacy, honey, want to share the good news?
Stacy glanced back at Ashton.
My mother still doesn't know.
Okay, how far along are you?
197 days.
That's precise.
We have a calendar, she murmured. It makes it easy to remember when the baby is due.
They'd had the option to buy a calendar that counted up or counted down. At least theirs didn't directly remind her of how few days there were left to tell her mother.
We got a dog, she added, mostly to change the topic. Bay is also pregnant, and everyone knows she's a Doberman and very well trained. She used to work for the government.
So don't mess with her, Kit added. Not only can she kill you, I'm pretty sure she would know how to hide the body.
Bay is very sweet. Stacy shook her head. I don't want Ashton to be worried about our dog.
I get along with dogs, Ashton assured her. Puppies will be fun.
I've been studying what's involved with the canine birthing process. The vet thinks since Bay had puppies before, she'll be an excellent mother.
Stacy was hoping the dog could teach her a thing or two. It would be nice to expand her knowledge on the subject, which was, to date, virtually non-existent. All she knew about being a mother was that she didn't want to be like hers. She never wanted her daughter to feel about her the way she felt about Bunny. Not exactly the role model for a well-rounded upbringing.
The return trip was quick. Kit pulled into the driveway. While Ashton collected his luggage, Stacy went inside to remind Bay they were adding to the pack. Technically, dogs didn't think of their family members as being part of a pack. Dogs were more loyal than that, so the family unit was more like a gang where allegiance was sworn and members protected each other to the death. But when she'd tried to explain that to Kit, he'd told her that talking about their pack was going to be easier for everyone. And when it came to things like social niceties, she trusted Kit implicitly.
Bay, sit, Stacy said as Ashton walked into the living room. The Doberman's ears went up, but she stayed in place. Ashton dropped his bags and slowly approached the dog.
Hey, Bay, I'm Ashton. You're beautiful.
Bay, greet, Stacy said.
Bay rose and stepped toward Ashton. She sniffed his hand, then his shoes, before turning her attention to Stacy.
Good girl. Ashton is going to be living with us now. He's part of the pack.
Bay looked between them before walking closer to Ashton. He dropped to one knee and rubbed the side of her face. Her stubby tail wiggled furiously as she swiped his cheek with her tongue. Ashton winked.
Told you. Dogs love me. He grinned. As do the ladies. Let's see if you love your room,
Kit said, carrying his nephew's bags. They all went down the hall and into Ashton's room. Stacy hovered in the doorway, anxious about his reaction. "If I forgot anything, just let me know. There are school supplies in the desk and toiletries in the bathroom."
Ashton turned in a slow circle, then faced her. "Stacy, it's perfect. Thank you for letting me stay here."
"We're happy to have you."
She hesitated, wanting to say more. It seemed as if Ashton needed something, but she had no idea what. Should she ask about his mother? The friends he was leaving behind? Did he want the house Wi-Fi code? Uncertainty made her uneasy, and she looked to her husband, who appeared perfectly relaxed. Harper would know, she thought regretfully. Bunny, even Becca. She was the only one who was forever scrambling to be just like everyone else.
"This is Harper."
"What the hell, Harper? Is this how you treat all your clients? What's wrong with you? You're not just fired. I swear if I had time, I would sue you."
Harper went cold as her stomach clenched into a knot. She stared at the phone number on the screen, but didn't recognize it. "I'm sorry," she said as calmly as she could. "Who am I speaking with?"
"Stan over at Mischief Bay Landscaping. You messed up my billing. From what I've been able to figure out, nearly a quarter of my customers were billed wrong. Wrong amount, wrong invoice. You name it, you screwed it up. I'm going to tell everyone I know what a shitty job you did. Mischief Bay is a small town, and I'm going to do my best to see you never get another job in it again."
There was a click, then silence. Harper thought she might throw up, only there wasn't time. She raced into her office, Thor and Jazz on her heels. She flipped open her laptop and clicked on the landscaping billing program, then grabbed the stack of invoices that were to be entered. The first three or four were fine, but as she got deeper into the stack, she saw that Stan had been right. The amounts were transposed or the wrong services had been entered. Two lawn service clients had been billed the right amount, but the column for pool service had been checked. It went on like that through the first quarter of the stack. After that, the billing was correct. Harper sank onto her chair and moaned. No, no, no. It couldn't be this bad. It couldn't. But it was, and she only had herself to blame. She'd known Morgan wasn't paying attention to her work, but she'd been too wimpy to call her on it, and too busy to check her work. Now she was going to pay big time. Stan wasn't kidding. Mischief Bay might be smack in the middle of Los Angeles County, but it was still a small town, where nearly everyone knew everyone else. If he started telling people how she'd screwed up, she was done for. Bile rose in her throat. She swallowed it back and told herself not to panic. She had to figure out how to fix the problem. She couldn't undo the mistakes in the billing, and Stan was mad. Even more important, his customers were pissed at him, and he could easily lose business from the mistake. So she had to make it right. She tugged off her headset and raced to the kitchen where she grabbed her handbag. "I'll be back in a bit," she told the dogs. They had a doggy door should they need to go to the bathroom, and they'd already been on their walk with Duane, so they should be tired. She hurried to her car and drove directly to Stan's office. With luck, he was still there, plotting his revenge. She burst into the small building and found the older man sitting at his messy desk. He glared at her.
"What do you want, Harper?"
She'd done her best to plan a response on the way over, but faced with in-person fury, she found her mind going blank. For a second, she thought her stomach was going to make good on its earlier threats. Then she drew in a breath and told herself she had to get a grip. There was no one else around to fix this particular mess. "I wanted to apologize in person," she told him. "You are right about everything you said. The invoices were wrong, and that is inexcusable. I didn't do my job correctly. Worse, I made a mess for you to clean up when all you wanted to do was get one thing off your already full plate." His stern expression didn't relax.
"So, you're sorry. You said it. Now go."
"I will in a second. First, I would like the chance to fix what I did. By 5 this afternoon, I will have compared every invoice with your original paperwork. I'll make a complete list of which are correct and which aren't. Over the next 2 days, I will personally call every customer who received an incorrect invoice and explain it was my fault, not yours. I will send out corrected invoices." She swallowed. "I would also like to do next month's invoicing for free. After that, you can be rid of me."
Are you kidding me? That's ridiculous. Do you know how much money you're going to lose?
No, but that doesn't matter. You relied on me and I let you down.
Stan glared at her.
It wasn't your mistake, was it?
She raised her chin. It's my company and my responsibility. That's what matters here.
You're killing me, Harper, you know that? Fine. Fix the invoice and call the clients. You can do next month's billing for the amount we agreed on, but if there's even one mistake, we're through. Got it?
Yes, I'll get you the report by 5 today. Thank you for allowing me to fix this. He waved to the door.
You have a lot of work to do. Get out of my office.
She did as she was told and escaped. Once she was in her car, the shaking started. That was followed by waves of cold. Then her old friend Nausea returned. When she was able to hold her phone without dropping it, she texted Morgan and told her she was fired. Perhaps not the most professional of reactions, but Harper figured she had earned the right to be pissy. Now all she had to do was clean up the Stan mess, which meant finding an extra 20 or 30 hours in every day. Chapter 9. Meetings to update a research program could be exciting or frustrating. Breakthroughs tended to come in clusters, which meant long periods when there was little to report beyond what hadn't worked. Stacy firmly believed that failure was as useful as success, not as satisfying, but just as important. Each failure brought the team closer to their ultimate victory. Her job was to direct, inspire, and innovate, as well as manage her team. She enjoyed the variety in her day, although her favorite times were when she was working in the lab. But that was not today. She sat in the conference room with the rest of the team leaders as they brought each other up to date. There were 6 team leaders and their assistants. She and Lexi were the only women. Carl ran the meetings. While she technically reported to him, he had no control over her research or her results. Those were managed independently to avoid any potential conflict of interest. 4 years ago, a large bribery scandal had rocked the company when it was discovered that researchers were being paid to consider options that weren't viable for the general population, but might help a handful of patients. Patients who had access to lots of money. The researchers involved were fired, and Stacy was brought on to take over the MS program. She'd cleaned up her department, reworked the team, and was very pleased with their progress. While others sought to find a way to prevent MS from ever happening in the first place, Stacy's group wanted to improve the lives of those already afflicted with the disease. Lesions in the myelin, the coating that surrounded every nerve, prevented normal communication with the nerves and caused the symptoms. The more lesions, the less communication, the greater the impact on the patient. That was her area of research, looking at ways to repair or regenerate the myelin. Once the nerves were damaged, the regeneration wouldn't help, but for those patients with functioning nerves, reducing the lesions would allow motor function to be restored. Some progress had been made. New medications and treatments were being developed, but Stacy wanted more. Stopping the process wasn't enough. She wanted to reverse the damage done. Carl, a big bear of a man, dropped his reading glasses onto the table.
About the travel schedule for the second half of the year. Stacy, you're in demand as a speaker as always. I want to balance your work schedule with your travel schedule. We're so close to a breakthrough with your team's work that I'm concerned about you being gone. Having said that, there's a symposium in Orlando in July I think you should consider attending.
Stacy involuntarily glanced at Lexi. Her assistant attended the meetings to take notes and document what was discussed. More of the company's mandate to be transparent about the research. Lexi smiled encouragingly at her, as if pointing out that the opportunity to tell Carl about the baby wouldn't get much better than this. Stacy cleared her throat. "I won't be able to attend," she said firmly. "I'm taking 3 weeks off in late June. I've already cleared it with HR." She paused. Lexi mouthed, "Go on." "I'm going to be out on maternity leave."
"You're adopting a child?" Carl asked. "You never mentioned it."
"I'm not adopting. I'm pregnant." Everyone but Lexi stared at her. Most of them looked down, as if wanting to confirm her growing belly, something she'd done her best to conceal.
"You're having a baby?"
Max, one of the other team leaders, asked. "In June?" She nodded, not wanting to say exactly how many days she was pregnant.
"You're 40,
Carl said.
then winced as if he wanted to recall the words. "I'm aware of the risks of an older mother's pregnancy," she told him. "Gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, miscarriage, and preterm delivery. As of now, I am perfectly healthy. There's no reason to assume that will change. I'm going to work up until delivery. I've discussed all this with HR," she added, in case they hadn't heard her the first time. The men looked at each other. Max leaned toward her.
"What about after the baby is born? You'll only be on maternity leave for 3 weeks?"
"Yes. Kid is going to stay home with the baby. The school year ends in early June, so that works out nicely."
"Kid's going to be a stay-at-home dad?" Carl asked. "What about breastfeeding, Stacy?"
She bristled. "That is not an appropriate question, Carl. I don't ask you if you use Viagra. What decisions my husband and I choose to make about our child are our business. What you need to know is that I will be gone for 3 weeks and nothing else. I've already proven I'm more than capable of doing my job while pregnant, which is all that matters for the purposes of our discussion." She paused and glanced around the table. "If there's nothing else, can we get back to our meeting?" Carl glanced down at his notes, then reached for his glasses.
"Of course. Congratulations, Stacy. Max, you're next in line for the symposium. Do you have any scheduling conflicts?"
Stacy looked at Lexi. Her assistant grinned and gave her a thumbs up. Stacy tried to take comfort in that, but there was little to be had. She was shaking and wasn't sure what had upset her. She was used to standing up for herself in all sorts of ways. Being a woman in her field of work wasn't usually an issue, but she'd dealt with it before and not been the least bit bothered. She wondered if this time was different because she was pregnant. Did she feel vulnerable because of her condition and her biological need to protect her unborn child? She wanted to say no, but she knew for a fact that hormones were powerful, and the body's need to pass on its DNA would not be denied. She told herself she would work on the problem later, then turned her attention back to the meeting. As she listened to Max and Carl talk about the symposium, she tried not to notice the furtive glances from her male colleagues. Even if they were looking at her differently, it wasn't her problem. It was theirs. Calligraphy was one of those weird things that was both simple and difficult at the same time. It was just writing different letters, something Harper had been doing since she was maybe 5 or 6. But there was an element of precision that always made her a little nervous. She'd already created the name cards, taking a plain white stock and lightly painting it with watercolors that matched the wedding's colors. After writing all the names, she would glue on tiny fabric hearts in the upper left-hand corner. The guest list was 197 people. Harper had been torn about taking the job. It would require a lot of time and effort, and most people didn't want to cough up the money for something as disposable as a place card. Paula, a far more reasonable party planner than Kathy, had asked her to charge whatever seemed fair. Harper had done a practice card, multiplied by 197, then had added a buffer for fatigue. She'd said she would have to charge $5 a name card, plus the cost of supplies. Shockingly, the bride had agreed, leaving Harper with yet more work, although this time she was making well above her goal of $25 an hour. She sat at the big desk in her craft room, the wedding guest list on her left, the stack of painted cards on her right. She was up to the F's when she noticed Becca hovering in the doorway, Jazz at her side. Harper put down her pen and opened and closed her hand, flexing her sore fingers. "What is it, Becca?" she asked, turning to face her daughter. Becca pressed her lips together. "Do you, want me to help?" An unexpected offer. "Not with the calligraphy, but maybe later with the gluing. That would be nice. Thank you." She paused. "Was there something else?" Becca hesitated, then shook her head. "No, that's all." "Okay. I need to get back to this." Harper continued writing out names. She used a ruler to keep track of where she was on the list and checked the spelling both before and after she wrote the card. No one wanted a misspelled place card. Movement caught her attention. Becca and Jazz were back. She kept her pen and stood. "What is it, honey?" Her daughter shifted her weight from foot to foot. Never a good sign. Harper ran through the possibilities in her head. Something with school, something with a friend, something with Terrence. As far as she knew, Becca was doing fine in her classes. Her last quarter grades had been a little lower than usual, but Becca had a heavy load, academically. Jordan was around plenty, so the friendship should be fine.
There hadn't been a boy that she knew of. Harper thought about how busy she'd been lately. She was always scrambling to get her work done. Was that the problem? Was she ignoring Becca? "Come on," she said with a smile. "I need more coffee. Let's go raid the kitchen."
"Okay."
Harper poured herself coffee while Becca carried the cookie jar over to the island. They settled on stools next to each other. Becca opened the cookie jar and looked inside. Frosted sugar cookies, peanut butter, snickerdoodles, and oatmeal raisin with chocolate chips. In an effort to both help and shame her daughter, Bunny regularly brought over batches of cookies she made in her apartment.
"Oatmeal raisin," Harper said. "That way I can say I'm getting my whole grains."
"Cookies don't count, Mom."
"Says who?"
She took a bite and sighed as the flavors settled on her tongue. Bunny might have unrealistic expectations for Harper, but the woman could bake like nobody's business. She sipped her coffee and waited for the combination of sugar and caffeine to heal her. Then she turned to her daughter and said, "Okay, I'm braced. What's up?" Becca had picked a peanut butter and a frosted sugar cookie. She put them on a napkin.
"Great Aunt Cheryl left me her car."
She looked up. "It's in really great shape. Ramon said she'd taken good care of it and the tires are new. I know it's a big deal, Mom, but I'm 16. Now you don't have to worry about buying me a car."
"I wasn't planning on buying you one," Harper said automatically, as she tried to process the information.
"A car?
A car." A thousand thoughts crowded her head. Everything from, "Really, you couldn't have mentioned this before?" to wanting to yell at her ex-husband for not mentioning it when he and Becca got back from Grass Valley.
A car? There would be insurance and upkeep and... "You don't even have a license yet."
"I'm working on it. I've passed my class at school, and I have my learner's permit. I only need the practice hours. Lucas is helping with that. He's a cop, Mom. You can trust him."
"Detective," she corrected automatically. "Do you know what the insurance is going to cost? And gas?
I'm going to help with that, I swear. I'll get a job. You'll see, Mom, it will be great. You won't have to drive me anywhere."
A job? Becca was too young for all this to be happening. Only she wasn't. She was, as she'd pointed out, 16. Almost 17. She would be a senior in the fall, and then she would be off to college. But a car... Harper thought about her monthly budget and nearly began to cry. Putting Becca on her insurance policy would save a little, but still, how was she going to pay for insurance? Even if her daughter did get a job, it wouldn't be enough. She would have to talk to Terrence about him kicking in something. Becca was his daughter, too. Becca's phone chirped. She glanced at it, then back at her mom.
"That's a delivery service. They're here."
Harper nearly fell off the stool.
"The car is here now?"
Becca raced to the front door, Jazz at her heels.
"Uh-huh. Come see."
No wonder her daughter had been hovering, Harper thought grimly. She'd been trying to figure out how to break the news. Harper supposed she should be pleased that Becca hadn't simply had the guy park it in the driveway and waited for her mother to notice. A large car carrier was parked in the middle of the street. A man was unchaining a pale blue Toyota Corolla. As she watched, he got in and backed it down the ramp before pulling it into the driveway, where Becca danced impatiently.
"Isn't it beautiful?"
her daughter asked, laughing as she spoke. "Ramon said all the paperwork is in the trunk. It just had an oil change a couple of weeks ago, so I won't have to worry about that for a while." Ramon, great Aunt Cheryl's longtime boyfriend, had obviously done his best to make the car ready for Becca. If only he'd thought to call Harper and give her a heads up.
"What's going on?"
Bunny asked as she came around the side of the house.
"What's that? Did you sell your car?"
"No. Great Aunt Cheryl left this to Becca. It was just delivered."
Bunny looked delighted.
"Dogs and a car. What did she leave you, dear?"
"Nothing."
Harper refused to engage. No matter what Great Aunt Cheryl had left or not left her, they had been friends, and Harper would always treasure that. The man handed Becca the keys, then walked over to Harper.
"You need to sign for delivery."
She scrawled her name. Becca opened the driver's door and got behind the wheel, then jumped out and spun in a circle.
"This is the best. I can't wait to get my license and go driving."
She wrapped her arms around Jazz. "You'll be my first passenger."
"Too bad Great Aunt Cheryl didn't think to leave money to pay for insurance,"
Bunny said. It will be fine, Harper assured her. At least this way I don't have to worry about buying her a car. Becca opened the trunk and pulled out a box. Mom, this is for you. Ramon said there were a couple